Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey everyone, and welcome to Pixels, a podcast for the discerning gamer. Hey everyone, and welcome to Pixels. My name is Patrick Beja, and we're going to be talking about video games today, as we do every couple of weeks. We're going to be talking about games on PC, on Switch, on consoles, on everything and news from the industry, what we try to do on this show. I wasn't going to do an episode this week, to be honest. We had a number of scheduling issues. I've been traveling, so I figured maybe I could skip this episode, but then I played a couple of games that were pretty interesting, and there are, you know, I figured we're going to be doing a quick one and discuss very quickly a few of the industry news, because there's some interesting stuff that's been happening. Overall, I didn't think I was going to do one, and then I couldn't help myself, I guess, is the way you can describe this episode. But it's going to be an episode where I'm alone, because of all of those, that traveling and scheduling issues I was talking about. So hopefully you still get something out of it. I'm going to be talking about Sekiro, which I played for about an hour. I'm going to be talking about Baba Is You, which is kind of a crazy puzzle game I'm excited to discuss. And we're going to talk about EA, about Google, about the Master Chief Collection, and a bunch of other things. So strap in, and I hope you enjoy the ride. We're going to start with Sekiro. Sekiro is the latest game from From Software, of course, the developer of the Dark Souls series and Bloodborne, all of those games that you, of course, know and either love or hate. And it's coming out in just a couple of days, towards the end of the week, on the 22nd. And I think we've heard a lot from people who have a history in that series, and you know, all of their games are more or less in the same spirit of being difficult games that have redefined a section of gaming for everyone ever since they started. And I think we've heard, as I was saying, from a lot of people who love the game, who love these games, but not so much from people who don't. And I am squarely in that second category. If you remember, in the previous episode, I was discussing with Jason and saying that I would love to love them, and I feel like I'm missing something. But so I'm not like completely closed to the idea of those games. It didn't click for me, and that moment that a lot of people talk about with the game clicking hasn't happened for me. So I got an opportunity to play Sekiro for about an hour. There was a free demo station in one of the stores next to my place in Paris. And it was an opportunity to play it for about an hour, which is not a lot of time, but it does give you a little bit of a sense. It was essentially the demo from Gamescom, which a lot of people have played then. And again, I think it gives you enough of a little bit of a look to at least know in which direction you're headed. So if you're thinking that, oh, why did this start? The Siri on my watch started listening to everything I was saying. That was weird. So for people who love the game, I think it's going to be... let me think about how to put this. I played it for about an hour. It is a game that started out as a Tenchu game. So Tenchu is, of course, a ninja game where it's all about stealth and infiltration and stuff like that. And it evolved into something a little bit closer to the From Software games, the traditional ones, but it didn't go all the way, at least not in some sections of it. So it's not a stealth game, but okay. I'm saying this a lot, sorry. I think there are really two very distinct parts of the game, at least in the level I've played. There's the regular enemies, which are relatively easy to deal with, especially if you're going stealth. And the game system has a lot to do with parrying. You press the parry button at the right moment to deflect your enemy's attack. And most of the attacks can be deflected. And if you do that, obviously, you're going to deal with the smaller enemies very quickly, to the point that it doesn't feel as much like a difficult game. Because in Bloodborne, the first enemies can destroy you. And yes, it can happen here too, but it's much easier to get around that difficulty. Not literally going around the small enemy, but to get around to just master that aspect of the game with the small enemies. So very quickly, you're going to be using all of the tools that you have in the game. You have the grappling hook that makes you very mobile. You can stealth around and kill the enemies in one strike. You have like mini bosses that are a little bit more difficult. But even then, maybe it's because I got used to those kinds of enemies in Bloodborne. I guess it's possible. But even then, you know, you can parry and you can... So if you parry, you're going to parry most of the enemy's attacks. If you just parry, pressing at the right time on the parry button, you're going to deflect. But you can also roll away. And so you have a number of tools to avoid incoming attacks. And that is the game before the bosses. Once you get to the boss, and I got to the boss and I managed to take one health bar away from that boss, it is a lot more challenging. It is a lot closer to the things you see in the Dark Souls or Bloodborne games. It feels like the game has almost two modes. Two sections, like the easy section, which again is not as easy as any other beat 'em up games, but much easier, at least to me, it felt much more approachable than Bloodborne. And then the boss, which is brutal. Like it is just as brutal as it is in regular previous From Software games. And that can be a little bit discouraging, I think. I put everything I had into the fight, and I didn't manage to beat the boss. I only took him one health bar, and it wasn't abusing the game mechanics. I was just using all the tools I had. You have your prosthetic arm, which can shoot fire, and that uses kind of an ammunition currency you have. And I used almost all of them. And that meant that for the second and third bar, first of all, there's a transition in the fight where the boss goes berserk, essentially, and you have to try and avoid him as much as you can. And that was surprising and frustrating. And then I don't know what the second phase is, because I guess the boss changes phases. Maybe it's exactly the same, but I don't know that I could beat him on the second second bar of life without the tools that I had used in the first one. You have a flamethrower that essentially sets your sword on fire, which does a lot more damage. I guess maybe I can get to it when I can use it when, or I can beat him if I get bang my head against the wall like I did in Bloodborne for the first couple of bosses, and then maybe it does become trivial, but I don't know. It's like the same difficulty that you see in those games, I was finding in this boss, but not in the rest of the game. The game also explains itself to you a lot more, which is removes a lot of the frustration from the previous From Software games. So overall, I'm not even sure what to think about it. It's a friendlier From Software game, but it's not. You still have some of that frustration. I guess some people are gonna be like me and think, should I try it and finally understand what the From Software games are? And I don't know what to answer to those people. I think if you've been completely closed to those games, if you've tried them and you're like, this is not for me, this is a type of game that I will never get into, then Sekiro is probably not going to be for you either, because you're going to play through the first level and start having fun and start using the grappling hook and start stealthing around and master the game. And then you're going to come across the boss and you're going to hate everything about your life. So I would say this is probably not a game for you if you're in that situation. Obviously, if you love the previous games, you're going to love it. So I'm not even going to address that. I think you're going to jump into it. You've already pre-ordered it and you can't wait. You're counting the days and hours until you can play it. So for you, you don't need me to tell you what I think about it. The third category, though, is people who are on the outside looking in, a little bit like myself, who are thinking, you know, I would love to love those games, but I don't. And maybe this one is going to be it for me. And I think for that category of people, which might be quite large, I think it might be interesting to give it a try. If you can spend $60 or maybe wait until it's on sale in a couple of months. But I think it might be interesting for you to give it a try because it is more welcoming. Not very much, but there is in the way it explains the game and in the way it welcomes you into the arenas in the difficulty ramps up a lot more. You're probably not gonna die more than once or twice before you get to the boss, which is again a very different experience from Bloodborne. Well, I mean, this is just my experience with 1 hour with a game. It might be very different when I get a chance to play more. I'm not 100% sure I'm going to buy it yet. We'll see. So many games, as we always say. But I'm not going to give you a judgment on all of that. All I can do is tell you how I felt with those different sections and how it would affect the different kinds of crowds that might be interested in it. So yeah, it's an interesting one. I'm still not sure what to think about it. We'll see. The second game I wanted to talk about is Baba Is You, which, if you're an avid gamer, I'm pretty sure you've heard the name bandied about in the past few days, because it's been making some noise. It's a puzzle game, a tiny indie puzzle game that a lot of people have been talking about because it's an original, not eye-opening, but mind-expanding kind of game. The core principle of it, so it's pixel graphics, very indie style game. The core principle of it is that you have you're a little creature, kind of looks like a rabbit, which is a baba, and you have a level that is closed, and you have different elements in the level that you can push around. And some of those elements are words, and some of them are, I mean, you have tons of things like grass, walls, doors, keys, etc. And some of the elements that you can push are words that describe the elements in the level. And some of them are operators, like is the first one. You'll find others in a subsequent level, like and, etc. And when you push together two words, with an operator, you form a sentence that affects the level. So, for example, if you have one word which is wall, you have is, and you have stop. So, wall is stop means that all the walls in the level will stop you from progressing. You will just not be able to pass through the wall. But if you push around one of the elements, then you have destroyed the wall is stop, and so the walls don't stop you anymore. So you can pass through them. The main one is Baba is you, and Baba is the little rabbit-like creature. And if you push away as Baba, if you push away one of the words from that sentence, then the game stops because you is no one anymore. So Baba is not you and nothing is you. So the game is finished. And you can go back, of course, from you can go backwards on all of your, like rewind essentially, all of your actions in the level. So once you get stuck, you can just rewind and you make a different choice. And I'm not going to spoil the key elements of the puzzle game, but I guess you see the picture. You get the picture. It plays with all of this in ways that are incredibly, I guess surprising is the word I would use. It's a game that a lot of people have mentioned, things like The Witness or other puzzle indie games, which I don't quite agree with. Yes, it is comparable in some respects. But the thing that it evoked to me, and that might be very personal, is Portal. It might be surprising to some people, but it has the same kind. It's a very different kind of game. It's still a puzzle game, of course, but you know the first person environment in Portal makes it very different. And of course, you have the entire narrative of Portal, which is a huge draw to the game with GLaDOS and what's happening in the world and all of that. But there are some moments in Portal where you do something, and it's not just a, oh, that's what the solution to the puzzle was. That's the standard reaction to finding the solution to a puzzle in a puzzle game. You're like, oh, okay, I get it now. I didn't before, but now clearly, I mean, I understand how it was. In Portal, when you find solutions, your mind kind of explodes. Like, this is outside of what I thought, of what my consciousness could comprehend, you know? And to an extent, it's not a one-to-one comparison, but to an extent, there are some ways in which Baba Is You uses its very simple core mechanics that evoke the same kind of feelings in me, at least. It's not just a puzzle game where I have to put the pieces together. It's that the pieces can be rearranged into, like, a house where I have to go and sit down and drink tea. And that's the solution to the puzzle. You know, it's like, it's very weird and very different from what we've seen before. So, again, I'm not going to spoil beyond this. If this seems interesting to you, I would recommend you go buy it. It's like $12 on Switch and PC. Obviously, the Switch is, as always, the preferred platform for these kinds of games. I will say, however, the developer, I just found out as I was preparing for this episode, the developer is RV Teikari. Arvi Teikari, because he's Finnish, so he's just, essentially he's one person, and this is a very indie game. As I said, it was developed in a game jam initially, and the concept was expanded to make a this actual release. it's not, there are some moments, the game is really well thought out, really interesting in many, many ways. There are some moments where I wish the core mechanics of some parts of the game were brought into the puzzles and the logic of the puzzles a little bit better. Sometimes it's like, well, I found this, but it was kind of by chance. There was no way I could have understood that this did that. But it's very minor and it's minimal. It is some elements of the games that are, it's not all of them, but I have to mention it because it struck me a couple of times. But even if you don't go through all of the, 200 levels, I think it's interesting as something new to explore and discover. So the name is Baba Is You, and it is a really interesting puzzle game. And I'm not usually a fan of puzzle game. I like them well enough for a little bit, but I get bored and go back to more arcadey kind of things. So Baba Is You is kind of a fun little thing. All right, let's move on to game news now. EA has announced that they are not going to be doing a traditional press conference at E3, which a lot of people have taken to be another nail in the coffin of E3 with Sony not being there. And EA was never there. I mean, they left E3 a long time ago. They had their own EA Play conference. But they had a press conference, which to everyone who wasn't at E3, which means the overwhelming majority of gamers, it didn't really change anything. Being at E3 or not being at E3 didn't change much for us if EA was doing a press conference anyway. They're not going to do that this time, and they're going to have multiple live streams, which is a weird way of approaching it. I guess it's the Nintendo route, which works very well for Nintendo and could work for EA as well. It could mean that the people who want to watch the stream about the many sports games will do that, and those who don't care about them will not have to slug through them. They're going to have probably an Apex Legends stream. I don't know. They're going to have maybe sports and non-sports, or maybe sports, non-sports, Anthem and Apex Legends. And of course, Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order, which is going to be revealed in April next month at the Star Wars Fest. I can't remember the name of that thing, but it's going to be revealed. And I'm guessing they're going to do a deep dive at E3. Game is developed by Respawn, of course. So with the success of Apex Legends, which they also developed, I think a lot of people are going to have a lot of eyes on that game if there weren't enough already. But I think I've said that a couple of times. I don't think it means E3 is dead in any way. I think these kinds of things are the types of communications you do when you don't necessarily want to grab the general press, the general media. When you want to talk to dedicated gaming media, then not having a press conference is fine. But if you do want to talk, if you have something bigger to announce, like Microsoft is going to give details about its next console, then you do want to have the general media. And that is something you can't really not have. A big press conference, probably at E3, because everyone is already there. So I guess it's one other tool they're going to be able to use in their communication strategy. And sometimes you'll have a big press conference and sometimes you won't. But I don't think it's totally going to go away, because it still draws a lot of people and a lot of media. So we'll see what happens in the next few years. But I would suspect, for example, that Sony will be back at E3, as I said, next year. But we'll see. Talking about EA, Anthem keeps having issues. And they've renewed their commitment to the game. But I've talked about it a few times since the game was launched, and I don't want to kick... how's the... how does the saying go? Kick a dead horse. So, you know what? I'm not going to. Still having problems. All right, let's talk about Google for a second. They announced that Jade Raymond, is that how you pronounce her name? I always pronounce it in French, so I'm not sure. Essentially, former Ubisoft employee. She was one of the big producers, if not the producer, behind Assassin's Creed. And she's one of the most visible faces in the gaming industry, probably mainly because she was one of the first female developers and producers that got a spotlight shown on her, and a very capable person. She went to a Motive and went through a number of different studios with big jobs all over. Now she's joining Google, which is clearly a sign that Google is in it for the long haul, or is going to be pushing their gaming service, which they're going to announce very soon, very much. I mean, they already had hired a number of other people, Phil Harrison being the most notable one, so it's not like there was any doubt that they were serious, but it's when you start having that many big names, it's important to take notice, or like it sends a signal, because you are not just doing this service as sometimes Google does. They create the service, they tell people, okay, go ahead, just do what you will, and then kind of wash their hands off of it. I think this is another sign that it's more than just that. So we'll see what happens when we hear more about the service very soon. As I said, I think they're presenting it at GDC, which is happening in just a week and a half. Is GDC on the 28th? Am I mistaken? I think it is I'm checking as I'm... Oh, no, it's starting now. Oh, my God. It's the 18th. The 28th is something else. So, yeah, we'll have some news very, very soon, because Google has a conference there, introducing their service at, which means by the time you listen to this, you probably already know all there is to know about it. So, all right, I'm going to move on to the Master Chief Collection coming to PC on Steam and on the Windows Store. That is... an interesting one. I think it's less momentous than a lot of people have been stating. Maybe it's because I'm, a European, more PlayStation-y historically person. Even though I did get the Xbox 360 before the PlayStation 3, so it depends on the generation. But I think Halo, while it is popular in Europe, is a little bit less of a craze than it is in the US, so it's a little bit less of a big thing for us. But still, it is an important moment for Microsoft, who continues to diversify the ways in which you can get their products. It's going to start, I believe, with Halo Reach, and then the other games are going to be added to the Master Chief Collection as time goes on. So, yeah, that's significant, but I don't think it is. It's just kind of, as I was saying earlier, another sign in the continuing trend that we've known for a little bit. Although I guess Master Chief on Steam is maybe more significant than I give it credit for. There's a number of people that have been that got access to Days Gone, and that game I think is going to be, depending on the expectations you have for it, it might be a good surprise. And the expectations are pretty low. If you don't remember, it's a zombie open world post-apocalyptic game that is exclusive to the PlayStation 4. It's coming out in about a month at the end of April. And a lot of people who saw it over and over again at different presentations were starting to get the feeling that it's played out, and it's tired, and it's not going to be interesting at all. And coming from that point, a lot of people who got a chance to play it were like, you know what? It's actually a pretty competent game that does what it sets out to do. And I don't think it's going to be more than that, but I'm being a fan of open world, zombie, post-apocalyptic narrative experiences. I think the game is going to be right up my alley, and I'm probably going to enjoy it. And I think a lot of people are also going to enjoy it. It's not going to revolutionize anything, but it's going to be a good time for those who enjoy these types of games. And that's more than I think a lot of people were starting to expect about the game. And since we're talking a little bit about communication in this episode, I think it was a masterful lowering of expectations from Sony for the game. Because they started talking about it a lot less. They had a few videos that were released that were relatively tame, that were pushing some of the interesting systems of the game, but nothing too explosive. And then they got people to play it. So since people aren't expecting, God of War or some kind of incredible, innovative, revolutionary experience, they're like, yeah, it's pretty good. And the way they lowered those expectations was very clever, because when you have a triple A exclusive title, you want to go all out and you want to push it as much as you can to, you know, get value out of your investment. It would have been very easy to make that mistake, to show it over and over again more than they have, to trot out the developers. When it was too early, I'm sure there will be developers interviews closer to the release, but when it was too early and get expectations up, et cetera, et cetera. So I wanted to note that aspect of the way they approach communications, which could, you know, that could make or break the success of this game. I think as it stands, if they continue on that trajectory, it's going to be a pretty well-regarded game, and it helps the PlayStation brand so much now that we're in the last, let's say, couple of years of focus. The PlayStation 4 is still the focus for Sony. We still have some games coming out, but it's very easy with the company taking a step back, not being at E3, it's very easy to think, oh, well, you know, the PlayStation 4 is kind of done. Everyone's looking at the PlayStation 5. But they still have a number of big games coming. And with Days Gone getting a timid thumbs up, but a thumbs up anyway, if it does, it's like, yeah, it's still, the PlayStation 4 is still here, and we'll get another big game probably towards the end of the year, and another one in 2020, and then we can focus on PlayStation 5. And of course, it's a very different concern than sales. Sale numbers and number of games coming out, of course, the PlayStation 4 is still going to be the focus for a long time. But news-wise and communications-wise and what people are talking about and excited about, the focus is going to shift fairly soon within the next... Well, to be honest, the focus is going to shift when Microsoft announces their next console. And Sony, if they play their cards right, they're extending the positive outlook people have on PlayStation 4 until they've milked it as much as they can. And so there's a lot of dominoes falling the right way, but in a small way, the way they've managed the communication about Days Gone helps that strategy. And so that's why I think it was a really interesting way of going about it, not just for Bend Studios and the work they've done in that game, but for the PlayStation 4 strategy as a whole, which has been very well engineered from the beginning, really. Gearbox is going to announce Borderlands 3 at PAX East. Oh, that's what's happening on the 28th. PAX East is on the 28th. They've teased it, and for once, they're not denying that it's going to be Borderlands 3, so it is going to be Borderlands 3. Now, we know. So, I don't know if I... I don't know how much I want Borderlands 3. I want the idea of the fun I had in Borderlands 2, but I hope it's not just Borderlands 2 with prettier graphics. I hope they change the formula a bit, which is always risky, of course, because you might change it so much that people don't like it anymore, but I think there's, if it's just Borderlands 2, it's going to be, yay, Borderlands 3, and then people play it a little bit, and the focus gets taken away by other games, and it doesn't see the kind. That's the problem with sequels. If you do exactly the same thing, there's diminishing returns, and people get less and less excited about sequels. It's the Call of Duty issue, right? If you don't do Modern Warfare, which changes everything, then people get into the mode they're in now, which is, well, it's the same game over and over again. It's fine, but we're not that excited about it. And here, a second episode kind of perfects the fun things from the first one. So Borderlands 2 is kind of the best. Very often the second one is the best in the series because you never have time to finish everything you can in the first game you put out. So the second one is kind of a polished, improved, doubling down on the things that work version of the first one. The third one often feels like more the same, and that's where you get the downwards trend of, well, I mean, it's fun because I like that game, but it's not surprising me in the same way. And that can be fine. There are many games that are great without reinventing the wheel, but we've waited so long between Borderlands 2 and Borderlands 3, and I don't count the pre-sequel in this, that I think it's important to have something that is not just Borderlands 2 with prettier graphics. But we'll see on the 28th. The Battlefield 5 Battle Royale mode, the Firestorm mode, is coming on the 25th. So if you like Battlefield 5, it's one of those things. I think the Battle Royale inside a game that already exists is only going to interest the people who are already fans of that game, which is pretty obvious, but it still seems interesting. It's like you have vehicles that play more important roles than in other Battle Royales. You have a very wide map, etc. It's a very large map, Battlefield style. So it's cool, but for people who already have Battlefield 5, I feel. No Man's Sky is getting another update this summer. It's described as a radical new multiplayer component. And we don't know what it is, but they're still working on it, obviously. And there's going to be a huge update this summer, multiplayer focused. That's pretty interesting. One that I'm actually really excited about, Turtle Rock, which is the developer of the original Left 4 Dead, has announced that they're working. They did Evolve, which is the one of the few asymmetrical shooters where there were four hunters and one monster. And it turned out that it didn't really work out, unfortunately. Some of them do work. There's, I think, not Until Dawn. I can't remember. There's one of these, like, psycho killer shooters, which works pretty well. Evolve didn't really catch fire. There were issues with monetization as well. But anyway, Turtle Rock did the original Left 4 Dead, and they're now, they've announced they're doing essentially another Left 4 Dead. Of course, for people who don't know, Valve did Left 4 Dead 2 and essentially took that that IP away. I don't know exactly what the deal was, but Valve was the publisher, and then I think they developed Left 4 Dead 2 internally, and Turtle Rock didn't have anything to do with it, and so they were left without that IP. They are calling their next game Back 4 Blood, with the 4 being the numerical 4. It's really interesting because in the statement they've given, they are specifically saying, this is not a dead Left 4 Dead game. This is, we have a lot of different ideas. We are, you know, developing something completely different. Our goal is to bring something new, etc., etc. And yet they call their game, obviously, Back 4 Blood, which is there to evoke Left 4 Dead. It's completely obvious, but it's really interesting. And I think they should. I think they're saying, you know, we're going to be making the same type of game, and you like the original, we are the ones who made it. That's an obvious way of getting people's attention. If they called it, you know, zombies brawling, or, you know, zombie survival, people wouldn't necessarily care as much. If it's Back 4 Blood, you're like, ooh, wait, Left 4 Dead? Yeah, I want to play that. And it's completely fair. But it's funny that they're also going, you know, overboard in saying, we don't mean, you know, we are not doing Left 4 Dead. This is not a sequel or a reimagining or anything. Maybe I can find one of the quotes. Yeah, they're saying, Back 4 Blood is our brand new IP. You'll be able to shoot a lot of zombies like in Left 4 Dead, but there's a whole new stuff in Back 4 Blood which makes it unique. It's hard to overstate what an awesome opportunity it is. We had to return to a genre that was born in our studio over 10 years ago. And, I mean, I'm not finding the right part. The developer is new features, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, the statement was making it sound like, yeah, this isn't Left 4 Dead, which it kind of is. All right. There's a new Shenmue trailer, Shenmue 3, which is getting me to reconsider my opinion of Shenmue 3. I was very critical of the way it was going, the graphics, and I was kind of dismissive. But it turns out, according to this trailer, we'll see. I mean, the trailer is not the game, but the graphics are exactly what you would want if you love the original one and want updated, prettier graphics that are faithful to that original one. You don't want photorealistic. You want that, but that doesn't look like crap by today's standards. And they managed to do that. There's some seemingly very competent VO. There's some narrative aspects. There's a fighting system. I've said a few times, Shenmue, the original one, was ambitious and interesting, but ultimately for me, it failed as a game because it was modeling real life so much that it felt like work. But a lot of people love it, and it brought a lot of things to the gaming industry. And this feels like it will be a satisfactory sequel for the people who want one, which was not my assessment at all until I saw that trailer. So again, this is just a trailer, not the game. We'll see what happens towards the end of August on the 27th when it releases. Maybe it will be that. Maybe it will be better. Maybe it will be worse. But the trailer kind of made me rethink my impressions on the game. Ninja was apparently paid $1 million to promote Apex Legends when it first launched. So Ninja is, of course, the biggest streamer in the world. He's a Fortnite streamer. That doesn't take anything away from the success of Apex Legends, but if he was paid that much, you have to imagine they paid a lot of streamers to play it initially. And that certainly played into the snowball effect that it had in the first weekend. The game being a great game certainly didn't hurt. I mean, with a bad game, they could have paid that much money and the thing would have died after a couple of days. But it kind of shines an interesting light on that strategy. And just to be transparent about the source, I think it was Business Insider that got that tip. It's a rumor, but it seemed they're pretty confident about it. And we always knew that that the streamers were paid to play Apex Legends, as they are for every game, but it seems, well, not every game, but most games include that as part of their communication strategy to pay streamers to play their games. And hopefully it is disclosed all the time. But that number puts more weight into this. If they paid him $1 million, they must have had a budget of at least a couple of million, right? You would give $1 million to the biggest one and then spread a few hundred thousands around to get... I can't imagine how many streamers they've paid. Maybe it was $1 million for him to get him, and, you know, 10 to 50 thousand for five additional ones. It's possible. I don't know. But it's a lot of money to get for to get to your streaming budget paid out, I guess, in the end. Valve is going to be looking at review bombing. Essentially, it wants to address the issue of review bombing, which I think is a good thing, especially since the way they're going to do it is, if you don't know, review bombing is when you are unhappy with a developer for a number of reasons. There, it happens because of, let's say, business practices, for political stances, for, I guess those are the main two. If Reddit or the Steam community doesn't like what you're doing with your game, with, you know, some monetization of the game, or if they don't like what you're saying publicly, if it's political, then sometimes the community gets into a frenzy and review bombs your game. So the thousands of people go and reduce the and rank it like 1 out of 5 or whatever. Obviously, that affects the performance of the game. And Valve has said that they want to address this by, when they detect these kinds of review bombs, it's very easy. They already have graphs that show the number of reviews for a game, which, when the game has been out for 3 months or 2 years, and the reviews, you see like an increase in number of reviews tenfold or hundredfold, obviously it's, something's happening. And so when that happens, they will check it out, see if it's indeed some review bombing. And if it is, they're not going to delete the reviews. They're going to leave them there. But for that period, none of the reviews that are posted, including the genuine ones, but there are going to be very few, none of the reviews are going to affect the overall score. And if you need the explanation, I mean, obviously, that kind of behavior doesn't... It kind of makes... it distorts the goal of the ranking, of the grade, because the grade is supposed to give you an idea of how much you're going to enjoy the game. And obviously, when people review bomb it because of factors that are completely outside of it, you know, that is not going to be representative of the value of the game. So I think it's good that Valve is looking at this. It's good that they're not deleting entirely the review bombs, I suppose. But it's an interesting shift in the way they approach all of this, because they famously said a few months ago, maybe even a year ago, that they were going to take a hands-off approach on everything. And we all knew that this isn't sustainable. And we've had an example with that rape game we talked or didn't talk about last episode. And this is kind of, to me, another example of this. It's not the same thing, but still. Last couple of things. Diablo is being sold on Google Games. That's Diablo 1. And it is the only place you can get it. And it runs like it did back when it was first released. And it's the first of a collaboration between Blizzard and Google Games. If you don't know what Google Games does, it's not just about the storefront. They really do a lot of work to get those games to work in our modern systems. There was a NoClip documentary, which I encourage you to go watch on YouTube. fascinating stuff about how much they work at getting some of the games to run, because those games, sometimes they don't have the source code. They have a few executables of the wrong version. They try to find how it worked at the time, which is very difficult because the companies don't exist anymore. Who owns the IP, et cetera, et cetera. Really a lot of work that goes behind all of this. And Diablo is going to be available there. I suspect that at some point, a Diablo remake is going to be made available on the Battle.net app for Blizzard. But until then, the only way you can play Diablo, the original one, is on good old games. Other games, as I said, are going to be available there from Blizzard. Diablo 2 and the expansion are on sale on the Battle.net site, but I don't think you can run those on the Battle.net app. So the others you can, because of course StarCraft was remade. Warcraft 3 is coming fairly soon. I suspect that Warcraft 1 and 2 will be available on good old games as well in the future. So that's kind of cool. Snap is going to announce a gaming platform. That is the mobile story of the episode, if you are interested in those. It's important because Snap is massive, or not as massive as it once was, but it's pretty big. And they're going to be going the Line route. Line is another app that pushes games and that kind of has a whole ecosystem unto itself. So Snap, you know, Snapchat is going to have games. I suspect it's not going to be the games that we are interested in, but who knows? Maybe. And even that might have an influence on the rest of the ecosystem, especially on mobile. So we'll see what happens. It's going to be detailed on April 4th, is if the sources that Cheddar has are correct. And finally, talking about streaming, I guess I could have talked about this earlier. Valve has changed the system for Steam Link, and you can now use your Steam Link to stream games from your PC anywhere, not just on your local network. So if you have a Steam Link device, which they were selling for like $5 for a few months, or a Steam Link app on Android or on Raspberry Pi, I believe, you can... didn't sleep very well. You can use that Steam Link outside of your house. Now, the issue is, of course, you need to have a really good connection for it to work, because streaming is dependent on the quality of your connection. And if you're the one streaming, it's going to be, I guess it's going to be touch and go on how well it works. But it is possible. So artisanal streaming services, I guess Steam already does it with your device's help, with your computer's help. All right, that is going to be it for this episode. Thank you so much for listening. You can find me at frenchspin.com. If you like this show, you can comment. You can find the Phileas Club, which is a more serious show, you can check out as well. And you can find me at NotPatrick on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And that's about it. We will be back in a couple of weeks with, well, a lot of stuff to discuss, because GDC and PAX East will have happened. So it's going to be an exciting one in a couple of weeks. Talk to you then, everyone. Bye.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.